Well, hello to everyone. Thank you so much. Today I have a very special episode. I have Dr. Amina Davlatchova here with me, who is going to talk about finding, your voice in restrictive environments, and will share some of the lessons from, Afghan and Central Asian women. So, before we go into and dive into the subject, I would like to properly introduce Dr. Amina. And number one introduction would be that she is a podcaster, and that's actually how we also got to know one another. She is an artificial intelligence consultant. She holds a PhD from the University of Massachusetts Amherst. She's in international development policy and research. Let's call her expert. And she has worked also as an education leader for Aga Khan Educational Services and is an advisor for women literacy programs in Afghanistan. And currently, she's active in innovation, in strategy. She's passionate about identity and entrepreneurship across Central Asia and UAE. Thank you so much for being here, Dr. Amina.
Oh, it is such a pleasure. I think prior to recording, I did express how delighted and not only delighted, we also figured out which language we are going to speak, but I'm delighted to be in your podcast. Finally, we made it. I think that's the reaction. And such a pleasure and joy to even have this medium. Like this digital medium, like I usually call like this thingy, this digital medium from both background that we come, Badakhshani Pamiris females coming together. I think that's a moment even to celebrate. I love
Yeah,
it. Thank
absolutely.
you.
I couldn't agree with you more, and thank you so much. It's been a challenge to even, come together indeed, and I'm very excited to have you here. And I hope, whoever will be listening to this episode would be also finding some moments of like totally connecting to our experiences, because even though like one is in Europe, one is in US, but I believe that the experiences are quite shared in many ways. So let's dive into some of the questions that we
Sure.
would love to have a discussion on. One of
Sure.
them being that in the work that you do, how do you create space for women to be heard and take part in decisions, especially keeping that there are some places where it's not easy to do?
This is amazing question in terms of let's park it where, I mean, the moment we, again, it's very contextual. The moment two women from Central Asia sit, like the mind, by default goes to Central Asia. By default, like how do we create space in Central Asia? And if that's the kind of a context I would like to share, it's at this moment, like 2025, in my like going back, I feel there is like I usually create out of air. I usually say, okay, we're getting together because this and this and this. It just doesn't happen by automatically. It just doesn't happen because people are so, we call it like Maslow hierarchy, like they're so much in survival mode. Like, like so much into, okay, let me do my house chores, let me survive, economical disparity, inequality that we call right now. Women are so much inside the domestic, like day-to-day life, that bringing to the level of, okay, let's talk about identity, which the heart of my doctorate dissertation. It's like I'm asking out of another planet. And I usually say in Russian, "Я что, с другой планеты, что ли?" So we will switch a little bit into different languages because I learned that your audiences are from a different background and language abilities. So, but overall, so sorry for reminders. Overall, Tajikistan, the short question is not easy. We have to make an attempt to create a space for them. Usually, the life hack, that's the term of a current terminology is I create thematic based. Let's say, okay, ladies, we're going to talk about this. Can we have 10 minutes to talk about this? Or if I am in the kitchen, the best way is to be in their environment. Like I go and visit them, you know, or can we meet somewhere in a neutral zone? Not a coffee shops, please. Like not a coffee shops. Because also I have a reason to say nothing against coffee shops. I love coffee. But because I worked in Afghanistan, and that's constant the background situation assessment that I do throughout every country, that I need to see the women are safe, number one, that is at the comfort of woman, confidentiality, privacy, very like high top priority for me, respect of their identity because they don't want any exposure. And I believe it should not be forced. I believe it should not be forced into any conversation. They need to be consented. And I have a lot of stories from Afghanistan, not a Tajikistan. Tajikistan, I've been in a different settings, like working with UNICEF, you know, working with women, giving them project grants and then monitoring that one in a professional setting. But I would not also take a small validity of meeting day-to-day girls, like the one I love to create a space when I go to buy in a market because I also do designing. And that's a heaven for me to talk to every small startup woman. While we're bargaining over the price, we talk about millions of other issues, right? And I love those moments. They are unspoken moments like, oh, she's selling something. And I tell her, tell me about it. You know, how did you make it? So she tells me a story of her grandchildren who is somewhere and then picks up an accent and she says, you are not from here. So I start learning about her, but that's a medium. Let's say I want to buy some fabric. Sometimes I don't need to, but because I'm so interested in people's life, so I literally say, okay, can you teach me? I'll give you an example of a recent current. 3 days ago, I had a presentation about female hygiene in resettlement. It's a Christian-based organization that, and they gave me permission to talk about it in his social media platforms. And they're hosting weekly programs, like art programs, and then as part of professional background in health identity, Afghanistan language. So the group that they came, they were a Kurdish woman, mothers and daughters. They were Pukhtu speakers who lived in Afghanistan long and then lived in Pakistan, who are from Wardak of province of Afghanistan, who are from all of these tiny, tiny spaces like Faryab, like village in Faryab, where is the Mazar-e-Sharif. So it's just like, God, this is amazing space, talking about space in the heart of Western Massachusetts. And all the women, we call them, they are in resettlement mode, you know, coming back to the Western culture. Some of them don't know even the second language like Farsi. So, but to have that space to talk female hygiene is a joy for me. I was like, can I have 2 hours of a session with them? But it didn't stop. Like we talked about clothes and then identity and then health. So I like, but it was under confidentiality. It was under safe space. We closed the curtains so no one can see them. We said, okay, tell your families, your son, your mahrams, we call in Afghanistan, because they're husbands. So you are safe. Like even if it's like a interfaith space. But I brought from different cultural denominations and faith books, you know, and then we merged, and then they didn't want to leave. It's like, girls, the session is done. But it was such a, I love those spaces. And I have perhaps time is short, but If we go in much more details, I'll share from each this creation of spaces. But the rule is consent, the confidentiality is high priority for me. And then trust, you know, that they're trusting you, their information is not going out. Reverse, your information also not going out. So in a humor tone, I usually say, please do not talk about your instructor at home. To your, like, do not extend it. As we don't extend stories about you, so do not extend, you know, you can tell a lesson learned from today's session, but not the privacy matters to the outside world until it's consented.
Yeah, no, I think this is very interesting that when we talk about space for women, also the fact that you bring that space close to them, right? Like wherever it is, where they are comfortable, where it is, convenient also. I think that part of it, especially giving the portfolio of different women that we have in mind, because there are some might be professional responsibilities, but there's a lot of chores, associations, different roles that they have to play. And having these kind of spaces in mind becomes even more interesting. Now, I would move to my other question for you, which I believe is also still connected for what we're discussing, is what have you found really helps women rebuild their confidence and sense of individuality when society has often told them to do otherwise?
Right, this is an amazing question. Usually, I love to go much more deeper. Like, usually, even the questions, right? Like, let's unpack questions because I learned that your audience, you know, like to have much more robust, like, much more deeper conversations that your podcast platform offers. You know, confidence is a very, right now, let's put it that way, right now in this turbulence. Confidence is actually like we call it one step forward, three step backwards, right? Because identity formation, we know how complex it is. Sometimes I say it's three-dimensional, right? Like your mind, your heart, your soul, you know, alignment with all of this, tuning yourself constantly, even in a professional platforms. Even in the professional platforms, we've done tons and tons times, including me, right? We say, okay, look at me, right? At times I feel I'm not ready to talk issues. So why would I expect from somebody who are marginalized, had not had an opportunity? We will talk about it. Each words that I say, I stand by. Let's put it that way. But absolutely, coming from a concept of empathy, first of all, is empathy, right? It's just I would not put that burden, that's the word. I would not put a burden to anyone at this moment of, you know, you be confident. Like those self-help $1 billion motivational concept of help yourself, be confident, you know, put a mask, another layer of a mask. We've done it. And here we are right now at the rise of, you know, loneliness, which we talked in across podcast, could be also interesting to your listeners. It's a tribal indigenous Pamiri language, but you know, at the, it could be 5 years ago, we did talk about it, confidence, you know, but at this point, whereas the mental health is on the rise, whereas loneliness is on the rise, whereas I usually say it to our young ones, right? The young ones are kind of a, can you get your things together, you adults? Like, what's the, you know, and I can say it because my doctorate was in identity formation of adolescent girls, especially in Afghanistan. And that even coming to interviews were absolutely in a fourth attempt that they agreed to come to neutral space and to even talk about the daily chores. And just imagine they're covered. A lot of word is used, abused, misused by Afghans themselves, like the idea of burqa, cover, veil. It's commercialized right now, which I don't like it, and I am feeling confidently saying in your podcast. But all the girls, especially the village rural girls. So what I pushed the boundaries of my doctorate, and I'm so delighted I did, is to go into the very heart of the most marginalized. In Dari Farsi, we say fitoda. So they're the most marginalized, right? It's so easy to talk about people who live in urban countries. Like, so easy to ask them, okay, speak, like, talk, what's your poetry? What's your embodiment, we call it? Like, you dress up, you go, you confidently, and then share your thoughts. But in the parallel to it, like, if you see the marginalized, the most marginalized woman in Afghanistan, absolutely. I think even Maslow's theory of hierarchy of basic needs is actually missing another ultra poverty, which in our faith, and I think it's okay to mention, right? Like His Highness the Aga Khan is mentioning, like dealing with the ultra poverty and what it takes to even go into the depth of ultra poverty and accept from them to be confident. So sometimes I say maybe I'm not a right person to talk about confidence because it's usually assuming that this world that we need to rush and hurry, it requires like woman to be like on a front runner, which I did in the United Arab Emirates. Like, but you know what? At the end of the day, I usually say fact speaks louder. Statistics speaks louder. Mental health is on the rise. Beautiful organizations, which are very empathy-driven organization right now, giving flexibility for mothers to have a remote jobs, right? Perfect, right? Just have a easy, relaxed, hybrid mode, dress code, easy, like no demand, no judgment, conversations. The matter of the fact that even we coming from a tribal indigenous and have an accent in English is just like tension rise to the high level, which I am so grateful that we are removing all of this. Like, come on. So what if she had an accent? And I'll tell you one example of it. I think it's just to bring a light conversation to your audience.
Yes,
The
please.
first time I talked about COVID videos, and it happened in such a way, it morphed, like synthesized into such a way that it was lockdown, Abu Dhabi, highly demanded environment of being at the top, because the United Arab Emirates wants to be at the top of the world, which I love it. Let's run the race, we call it. But in another side, from a development perspective, I usually say yes, we run with Millennium Development Goals first, right? We wanted the entire world to be in this education for women. Sustainability is a current term, but before we didn't use this when it was Millennium Development Goal. So a run across, like parallel across, coming from a tribal, you need to meet the high standards of high demand, high standards of working in corporate world, never sleeping. Let's put it that way. I think I can say in your podcast. And
Yes.
24 hours on a run. And when COVID hit, I was like, can we have a peace time? No. Everything turned into, and there was an article after a year that woman felt that they're not only looking after lockdown, house chores, babies, but actually they're working. So it's actually house chores, working on top of it, being on top of a professional on your team. And I had a 25 team direct that I would monitor. On top of it, our respected gentleman, and I can say this in your podcast, it's my opinion. Our respected gentlemen in the office somehow didn't pick up their phone. So the entire 400 staff corporate were like, what? Am I the one who is going to give an instructions of COVID emergency? You know what I mean? Like, it's just like, it really, like, it's supposed to be teamwork. It's supposed to be, let's shift into the contingency plan. No. Everything happened. Okay, sister, can you help? So, I'm increasing the spectrum of challenges that we face. And right now, when companies, and I love those companies, I love those stories that are empathetic towards, like, let's make things work, that people come to even a distance, remote, hybrid mode of in this contemporary world that is offering. So the confidence is like, which one, right? And I love, if you allow, I love to say, okay, this word confidence, although modern world is demanding, but at the same time, they would be leaders. They would be woman leaders, woman CEO, that you say, sister, you should understand, empathy is at least right now on my top list to say, be empathetic to people, because they're not, it's not easy.
I
Going,
yeah,
right?
I just wanted to highlight that I also love the idea that when we even talk about confidence, what does that really mean, right? What is the embodiment of this, especially given different contexts and looking through empathy? And I love the fact that it's not only about women, but just like generally an outlook to have is definitely going to help to navigate this whole concept. And this difference between confidence and in the classical way it's understood through self-help books and self-development, as opposed to real life examples with women and adolescent example that you brought. And I think it does open up the whole discourse around use of terminology and how actual they are and how relevant they are. So now that we've kind of unpacked a little bit confidence, and I really think this is really exciting to look into this. I wanted to ask you, having said that, having said and all the things that we've discussed so far, there should be some inspirational stories that could help, right, build that hope for the future. And I was wondering if you can share from your experience in in this diversity of world that you have, whether it's in UAE, in Central Asian context, in Afghanistan, or anywhere else in US, that maybe you have one small story of real change that you saw that maybe was affecting one woman or a number of women if it was done through a project.
Oh, sometimes I say, oh, I have tons of stories. And why? It's a proven when we worked with USAID, first round of our curriculum development on mental health, on a health issues for womanhood, because I also have a nursing medical background. And when we started to doing a training, I felt it just not getting into the heart of what I want to convey. And what I loved about the USAID that time, 2006 in Afghanistan, they said, okay, just be creative. And creativity and thinking, like challenging the status quo, challenging the stereotypical, traditional, let's do as we do. I love to say, nah, let's go, like, let's challenge, like, let's push a bar a little bit, right? Or raise the bar, you call it. And then first round didn't happen. We worked on curriculum development as a advisor. It didn't happen. And I say, no, it's not going to happen. So we had a community mobilizers who would go to the field, to the 12 provinces of Afghanistan, nothing. No phone, nothing. Like, electricity would turn off, but it'd come. We were considered to be privileged office. So what I did, I asked community mobilizers, go and you sit with women, right? In the chai, in a chosh, like in a lunchtime, you do, right? Yeah. Can you collect stories from them? The basic stories, their life stories, like how they cook, what they cook, because I had a nutrition. I had a topic about nutrition, like what are they cooking? What is in the bazaar? Did they have potatoes, kacholo doran? What do they have? So stories after stories, we're coming to our team, to Kabul, to main office. And we would open these stories. They were written in a scrapbooks, you know, in napkins, like all of it. Give the story, bring the story. So ultimately, that little act of I'm missing a story due to security, I could not travel to the province. At the first phase of, we call this a bridging program to prepare a midwife for Afghanistan. 686 approx, we prepared a midwife on a first 6 months batch. Very compressed program, but I loved every bit of it. So I would literally chase after each and say, tell me your story, tell me the story. Does the story rings a bell? Like, is it like logical? So I wanted to get into the mind, creativity slash stories after stories. Ultimately, 8,670 plus minus curriculum materials were pushed into women's stories. And it not only pushed into the Dari story, Pakhtu story, English story, and then a neighboring sistering program, which they will never admit, but I would love to share it. They would never admit that they actually took the methodology from our program. And I usually say, of course you did it yourself, but our stories became women, the feedback. You know, usually we say in international development, do your preparation much harder. Preparation is actually 1 year, launch the program 1 month. If you do, like according Robert Kiyosaki, if you do like due diligency, it's in a business term, but I took it into like due diligence, do your work so hard, be so sharp. It doesn't matter you are in Afghanistan and Somalia in the village of Kurdistan or Iran. It doesn't matter you are in a Maya culture, which I love, Central American culture of indigenous. It doesn't matter, or you be in just a village in Hoora, like in Pamir. But what it is, it's the women's stories that hold the power, and I've seen it. Not only the program was successful and it was featured in UNESCO and USAID, but after 10 years down the road, 10 years down the road, the program got a call. 2021, we worked on the program.
Wow.
So I think it's a phenomenal, and I think whoever I will see from USAID Development, this program of midwifery, women's stories, this is on a large scale, national level scale program.
Incredible
But
impact. Well, and since that, generally, like me also having experience, some experience of working in Afghanistan, I believe that especially when it came midwifery programs, I do feel like there was also, like when you try to build that bridge between culture and then certain changes that you're trying to build, because there was such a reputation connected to that profession.
right.
I felt like even locally, it kind of gave it one extra push because it was something coming from outside, partially. Having said that, there's already kind of the ground pretty much fertile for it, which is that perception. Which brings me slower to the next question that I have for you, that when you work in these challenging environments with certain norms and traditions, how do you balance between that innovation or that new approach that is being brought or new norms that we're trying, old norms that we're trying to challenge, however. But there are some traditional parts of it that could be resistant, right? So how do you balance between making it adaptable and growing, like the example you'd brought before, and at the same time you challenge some of the stereotypes?
Well, you know, the question is based on assumption, right? It's an assumption that those who are outsiders, like in Afghan term, it would be like Khariji, those who are outsiders need to bring something, right? There is a huge assumption in international development that development is need to come from somewhere outside. And one of the things in as a professional, you do a lot of needs assessment, like you do a lot of stock taking activity whether some countries or some contexts, like even in Pamiri household, we're like, why do you think that this is good? Like, and it's a beautiful, beautiful kind of a on air verbatim that comes towards me. It's just like, this is not America. And I kind of a laugh, right?
Oh, I
But
know what you mean.
like, this is not like, why do you think you are like, whereas you simply talking about hygiene, like basic routine changes in a house chores, which I believe when I go to Tajikistan, I become like a daughter. Like the house chores that we do, like automatically by default, I change professional, non-professional. That line is just removed, right? You're just coming to the basic house chores and wash the
Yes,
dishes,
yes, yes, yes. Yes, I couldn't agree with you more.
right? Like wash the dishes, clean the, and just like, hello, like which part of my, and then. The moment I love is when women try to challenge you, and I think we're bringing a witful atmosphere to your listeners. And one thing which I love doing because I miss home, the moment I go to Tajikistan, we are a little bit diverting from Afghanistan, but the moment I go to Tajikistan, I wear my mom dress. So literally, like mini mom. And but she does differently and I do differently. So anything I misplace, like that's it. And then I take this example, it's just like, my God, I can't do, in my own household, how am I expecting to do national wide change? But bringing about change, usually it doesn't happen in one go. It just doesn't happen in one, at least in my opinion, in my experience. I heard stories after 5 years. I so much want like this or that, but then I have to question myself, why would I, like just on an ethical human to human level of why would I push this first? And I noticed my other colleagues, like in international development tables, round tables, we are like, where is the impact? Where is the assessment or surveys or data that have showing that this change is needed? Like this change is culturally appropriate. And I wrote a piece about it in Are We Copy Pasting in Development?
Yeah,
And,
okay.
Are we like what a feminism in one context and feminism would be in another context? Like, which part of in Afghanistan, everywhere? I haven't even entered the building, I haven't even entered the training workshops. But the moment I usually have a headscarf, and then it just becomes a silky headscarf, so it falls down, and then I do not even notice that it did fall down. But it's the whole vibe, ambience of the training changes because there's a fear that I want to bring some changes to it, which is it is only silk scarf. Like I didn't, it's just, you know what I mean? Like I pay so much attention for every embodiment of what changes are we trying to bring, especially identity. Especially language, especially international development. And in the bigger platform tables, we usually say, have you translated that? Experts and consultants like me need to come to the ground and retranslate, match and mismatch, match and mismatch, that this is not a contextual language embodiment. Do women need it? Precisely for that matter, I changed my entire doctorate topic and to say, I want to know their voices first. What do they think that needs to, what adolescent health, mental health programs, and I'll give you one example and we can shift to another.
Yeah,
What
absolutely.
mental health issues means right now, and I'll give you example of a current from Europe. Somebody in my podcast, and I love to share it if it's okay with you. Like, is it okay
Yes, absolutely.
to become critical? No names, But it is I the idea of the podcast, at least in my opinion, is to help, but also to sharpen a little bit. When you are expecting a professional to have a podcast, it is an idea that we have sacrificed so much from where we come from. We've sacrificed so much and come and just to spend 1 hour of your time and my time and just have an air talk. That's not, I would agree for any interview. Let's have a substantial talk that we asking for a change. And right now it's becoming so prominent. Like, are you changing or you're just having like this, opinion-based, approaching professionals? I'll give you an example through the podcast in Shugni. Perhaps
Yes.
your listener could listen from Europe. Young girls contacted to talk about mental health.
Yeah.
And they said, we need a mental health. They've working, I think, with resettlement. Majority of them are asylum seekers, resettlement, immigration, newly arrived in Europe. Overall, it's a community development project, but no details. I am just making assumption. And then there was a mental health material. First of all, I said, I think you are 2 years late. Like, 2 years late, mental health is actually started screaming through COVID and after COVID, reports after reports, urban poverty is coming up, cities. Yesterday was a celebration of a smart cities, and we ask, like, which smart cities? And the question is, yes, we are Pamiri, yes, we are Badakhshani coming from Badakhshan, but we are professional. We are coming and we are solving table conversations of a current time issues. In a realm of international development. So then those people who contacted me, one was amazingly right sharp girl. I think they are under adolescent, and they said we need a help with adolescent health materials, especially indigenous languages, and Shugni Pamiri considers as indigenous language, mentioned by UNESCO. Not that it's my own personal interest, no. So, and I said, I think you're 2 years late, but I didn't say it because we are also careful with empathy level, not to criticize, but be very, genuinely nice. And I said, well, as a professionals, we need to retranslate all of this to, if you want to bring it to the tribal indigenous, let's say Pamiri mindset, who are in Europe or who are in a resettlement, who crossed the Mexican border, who are right now in Canada, in US, more than 3,000, data will change plus minus. But I think professionally for the indigenous community, you are late. Anyway, but I think I was very clear in English, but respectful. It didn't come across like it didn't. You see, I'm asking for a change. With a nice tone is like, I think you're 2 years late, meaning like, pick it up the momentum. Such programs are needed for mental health. Therefore, your podcast, what I compliment for you is to have a coaching sessions. And if it's, I think I'm going to do this to give a value to your platform is so much important. Having a coaching for the tribal or for the sisters, across the Central Asia, that is so important. In fact, we are late, we are behind. No judgment, but we are behind for many reasons, and that even a behindness need to be unpacked. But going back to the story, they didn't come back to me because I pushed and I said, first of all, you're late. Second of all, thanks God you find a professional from your own community. And look at operationally, it's much more easier when a person comes from your own community, retranslates everything which is needed to that particular context, community, need-based, demand-based, requirement-based, solves your problem. No, it didn't happen. Of course, cancelled. Of course, it's just we regrettably say that such services are not needed. Retranslation, meaning the community doesn't need professional like you and like me. Are we missing it? No. You know, we are just saying you miss a chance because then we help Afghans, then we help other Central Asia. You know what I mean? But what I, as a professional, and I'm so thankful that the platform, your platform, is flexible to talk about these issues, is that in every confidence building, in every change, there are hierarchies. Like, we want to come forward, set up programs, platforms, podcasts, expressing our voice, but look at the change. Change is resisting, 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 resisting. And what we say in humor in development, keep resisting until, you know, it backfires. You keep resisting. And sometimes I say, there was a beautiful podcast that I loved through as I was recording, and it's in Russian. I said, Хорог наш хорог, где мы родились, какая-то резиновая, right? Like, it's just, you know, it's just going through, like, you know, widening, slowing up. But in a development, you just say change is not happening easy. Change is a vertical, horizontal, but on the same time, resistance, especially tribal indigenous community, resistance is right there. It's given. You add on to your planning that people are going to resist even to the smallest change. Can you brush your teeth every day up to the higher level of high sitting on a table, conversation, narratives, you name
Yeah,
it.
it's, I hear what you're saying. I guess that it's true, especially also coming with development background. Bringing certain changes in the environment is very difficult, especially if there are certain things that are coming completely from outside. So it's indeed very important not to copy paste, as you've mentioned, but bring things that are done through deep understanding and analysis of the situation first, and bringing the people themselves who are actually in that context. It's unfortunate that example when it comes to mental health related issues, and I couldn't agree more that we really need to keep our game going when it comes to that aspect. I feel like it's long overdue, but at the same time, when we look into like just as an example of life coaching, for instance, as a profession, it exists more, maybe around 30 years more or so. So it's relatively new. However, the issues connected to the mental health, it's beyond that. But I do feel that some of it is also connected to generations, because I try to talk now with the generation of my nieces, and the
Right.
way they're talking about certain things, it just makes me so proud, because there's a lot of, first of all, self-learning, self-awareness, and trying to understand. There are some things available already out there through the social media. Not all of it being bad. Some of it is actually quite educational.
Oh,
And I
yeah.
feel like that is helping to make that shift, bringing that change within. However, I couldn't agree that it's going to take probably time, and it will, for us, from the perspective of our generation, probably we're going to be, more, requiring more time and patience and empathy, as you've mentioned before.
Can I kind of insert again?
Yes.
It's change is not generational, at least what I would like to clarify. First of all, I usually say, you know, back off from the adolescent and teenagers, because I call it out people who just, like, you know, everything dump it to the young ones, the young ones. No. That's not what I would like to kind of bring my comment. But the nature of change, right? The nature of, even logistically, we want to, let's say, lay out of my office. It takes time. That's what I mean. Or
Yeah.
the nature of, there's another factor that people's, or vice versa. You know, throughout, we did an intergenerational assessment, and one of the theme that comes across between the baby boomers, like in US we call it baby boomers, and then X, Generation X, and then right now there's Zoomers, and then Alpha, and then right now Meta, there's another term of it, meta generational. What runs across through all of them is being authentic. Like, what runs across perhaps you and your niece, or what runs across me and the kids is just like, oh yeah, she gets it. And then I say, like, what does this emoji mean? Like, oh, smile. Oh, okay, I got it. So we had to smile, we had to hug, we had to kiss the hands of our grandparents. But what I'm trying to say is, when you bring a change, perhaps I am maybe limited because I only look from international development, but same as also in corporate business, when we want to bring a change, where we want to say, okay, change the sales pitch, your narrative, by the time you develop it, by the time you talk to people, by the time they say, we are not bringing digital government to UAE, to Abu Dhabi, are we bringing artificial intelligence to our computers? A lot of people like, I'm not doing it, it's bad. So, these educational components like this podcast or other mediums can say, it's not that bad. It's not that bad to have, those kind of a thing. So, us coming from also under the belt of 29 plus experience of development change, we usually say it takes time. It's not a linear, it's a complex systems that not this and not that. It's not black and white. It's not like, okay, because of this, it's a multi-comprehensive faceted that they want to change. And sometimes, like the saddest that we went through grieving the entire shift of Afghanistan, settings, regime change. And like, we felt it. And I was actually live. I was in a meeting, in a meeting right as we have right now, in a day that, Taliban, and I can say it's my opinion to the public, absolutely not agreeing. Life, like I was live, 9 o'clock, we had a meeting with five trainers. They were Pantun University lecturers, and we worked on the midwifery programs. We did like one by one assessment, so I needed to double check. Thanks God I didn't have a flight to Kabul, which I love to go, but I didn't have that flight, which I worked remotely. Life happened. 10 o'clock, something not right. 11 o'clock, something is not right. They entered Darwaza. What is it? What is it? And then the cry. And then five women, my team, which my heart is just goes beyond. They started crying. I was standby. I say, just calm down, calm down. So, and then the voice, I cannot. It's almost like 2021, years, years, years. I have a therapy that is helping, but it's just too much. The voice, beyond that, there's a lot of sad stories that we couldn't change. Anything we wanted to bring, there was a absolute resistance to the face, to the level of threat, physical threat, big threat, a challenge to the life. But that day, let's say we're bringing change. Let's say we're bringing, okay, can we change the plan of today meeting? Simple as that. No, then something happened. Then 11 o'clock, apparently two of my community, two of my trainers, they had their daughters at university. The distance between university and their house is about 1 hour, and Taliban already entered. And what is it, as any sister, it comes to your mind, somebody, it's a chaos. So forget it. But what if, harassment doesn't happen, sexual assault doesn't happen, kidnapping doesn't happen. So by the time I stood by them on the phone, that's why I'm so grateful for the mobile company in Tajikistan, that we stood by a phone. My phone was open 24 hours, August 1 week, and I was standing by them. Later, I went to, even my mom cooked lunch, and then even my mom started crying. Like, the phone was on. And thanks God, the girls came from university safe. and then next screaming because they worked with America, we worked with American Development, like USAID. All the neighbors knew that they're working with Americans. That story never shared before, not even in my platform, but I think we're talking about change, right? And no, I stood by it and I said, if anyone knocks at your door, do not open, first of all. But if they push and force, give the phone to them. I'll talk to them. I know the language. I know a little bit Pakhtu. I will talk to them. And I say, this is nothing to do with any project. We are just talking on a female hygiene program. Washing hands, let's put it that way. I took the entire emotional load on me. And then after that, everything was safe after 2 days. The fathers, I talked to the fathers, the son, like everything was through remote. But life, regime changed, witness with the ear, not the face. Regime change, life as we speak, regime changes, and it's political, could be social, could be anything, like
There are
earthquake.
many things that we cannot control and many things that could influence, how the change is being brought in. But thank you for sharing this story, and I hope everyone involved in this story is safe and sound. And I couldn't agree that when that news also broke in, like I was also completely shocked through all this
Right.
experiences, thinking about all these lovely, amazing, powerful, empowering women who were so active and working in the communities that during that time in the projects that I was working in, and how they would always say also that at the back of their minds that today we have this freedom of being able to go and work and do these things, but we don't know what tomorrow upholds for us. What if something changes in Afghanistan, and where would we be, and what would be our lives? And that kind of still stuck with me. And I couldn't agree. I couldn't agree how devastating this could be, but I'm still very hopeful, and I'm still very hopeful that there would be many more positive stories that we will be able to witness. And I wanted to kind of, before we wrap it up, also to ask you to from everything that we've covered, but also beyond that, on everything that could be in your mind, that today, as of now, what it is that you are grateful for.
Oh, it's beautiful. I did say that in a sessions with the Afghans from, and the group was multinational. Like it was coming from Western Massachusetts, Americans. We were, and then I used this word, which I love saying it. My cup is runneth over, and it's actually coming from a book. They call it people of the book, but I love that term. It's like my cup is runneth over, first of all, because from the generation that I come, let's put it that way, shift, perhaps when I calculate it, I think we've gone like through, it's a tale of Soviet Union, then it's a change, then for some reason, as I was a biology major at Horog University, and then in one day I needed to learn English. Like, why do I need it? Remember, like to the audiences, I come from a generation that we learned Latin language. Yeah, I learned a Latin language for my pharmacology class, and I was studious from the time where I would actually look where, like, you have one pen. And that is a holy to the holy pen. And now, shifting to the each of these, and then getting countries after countries, sitting in professional platforms, coming from the indigenous, the mountain. There's so much mountain in me, I say, from a Lord of the Ring books. What I am grateful for is, how did I even pass through all of this? How? Like, there's not a day that I kind of say, how did I even manage? First of all, for the sanity of my kins and my family. But the other is, I am beyond. There's this term which I use in Tabila podcast, for whoever is giving much is required. If it's a given to us, the body, the health, the intellectual abilities, the wisdom, the heritage that we have from where we come from, the wisdom that they put in us, I think it's our obligation and duty to stay humble, to the course of service. To stay humble to the course of service. And in each service that I can do, I am so grateful. I am coming from a generation where I collect breadcrumbs. Like breadcrumbs on the tables, like do not like eat your
Oh, that's for
eat
sure. I
lunch
can
like
relate so much.
breadcrumbs.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Right? And then to be on a positive tone, I think it's also like apart from where we come from, we had almost 2 days ago, we had a harvesting in US, so finished harvesting. And whatever grandma and my mom taught me about, food, making bread. And I was introducing to my US friends is like, we are making home food. We are grateful for everything which this planet Earth is giving. I think we are custodians of this planet. And this sense of gratefulness is runs like per day. Either I would say, I'm so grateful, my cup is runneth over. At the face of the challenging days, there are days which are very hard. There are absolutely days which are hard. You don't see, you are in a brain, the fog is like not clarity. And because I'm empathetic, because I work with vulnerable groups, I put myself into troubles most of the time. My heart just runs beyond feeling sorry for people, disability, impairment, sickness, diseases, traumatized. And if little hope, little hope, you come and put a smile. You come, usually I bring dresses, like I say, why don't you wear pink? And then they change the rooms. Or why don't we do craft project and then, have a hope that in this challenging turbulence time, in fact, even we meeting together, in fact, not in Pamir, but here where I meet, I think to the other young girls who is listening to us, it's just like, wow. How did they do it? Like the question, it's by default happens. Like, how did they do it? And I think they should not give up. And that's the message, do not give up. Even then, I was grateful for the pen that I found. Even then, I was grateful for upcycling all the clothes, which I am grateful even now. Right now, they call it sustainability fashion. At that time, we called it upcycle. And that comes from the deep, deep teaching of the heritage that we have. Our grandmothers that would say, do not go into waste. Be grateful for what you have.
Absolutely.
I think it's embedded in a, and I think that attitude from the small tribal Pamir Badakhshan, where we come across the rivers, from the indigenous groups, this language, attitude, we need to contribute to the big world. It also in Japan, I know the countries which are resistance, bouncing back. And I think I would like, can I raise a hands and to say like Pamiri, like Badakhshan are also like bouncing back when challenges come and women are coming solo. We work alone, we stand, we sit with other sisters, women across the globe to say, let's contribute, let's work better, ethically, morally, balanced life, which we are not in this world, but we are in our small. I already distributed the salad which grandma taught me to some of my neighbors, and I say, well, that's
I love
garden.
that. I love it. You know, when I actually moved to Portugal, it was one of the things I was telling my husband, look, I just moved here, so I'm just gonna share because that's what my mom told me. Like, I want to share food. And he's like, you're gonna shock people. Like, you're gonna be knocking on the door and sharing food. People would think you're trying to poison them. Like, they would not understand that. And then when my mom came to visit me first time, she's like, okay, so who's your neighbor? I can see what you have here, a neighbor. So who's your neighbor? And those
love you,
are
Mom.
so beautiful things that sometimes we forget. But you know, I think that whole wisdom that you also mentioned about what our grandparents taught us, and one of it that is constantly something coming back to me, is the one that my grandfather said. He said that when you're doing good with your right hand, your left hand should not be aware of it.
Bilkul,
And I am taking it in for my entire life. And I couldn't agree with you that this is a beautiful way for us to wrap up this episode. And I think there would be so many women, men, boys, girls like us who will be listening to it and relating to it, no matter where they are, because I feel like that sense, that purity, that wisdom, that ethical value to the core of it, that philosophy of what actually matters in life. Didn't require them to have a PhD or anything. I don't know how, I don't know from which, because it took me 40 something years to understand what actually my grandfather was talking about, right? So I think all of it's just a beautiful way to wrap up and be grateful for where we come from,
Yeah.
for what was taught to us, and
Good.
inshallah we take it forward. So I want to say, Dr. Amina, this has been an absolute pleasure. It's an episode that was a lot of learning, a lot of laughter, a lot of sadness that we've shared. But I think that's also how you connect, on human level. So I really appreciate you, and I thank you for being here with me and whoever is listening to this episode.
Likewise, yeah, pleasure is mine. Likewise, thank you.